page 176 and 77. Now, this is the first part, and the third, this speaks about the soul and its influence. The soul and its influences. Now, I would very much like to get to the first two. I'd like to get through the first four segments, but let us get started and see how far we can go. Now, he starts off by telling us, he commenced this part already last week, he starts off by telling us, he made the warnings by Ez Bechele Kalafere Gimel Indon Ho'odom. He said, we have already explained very early on, that is in the third chapter that we have done, Indon Ho'odom, the whole subject of man, in man is found that which isn't found in any other creature. Now, we are not speaking about inanimate objects, we are speaking about the animate world. And there is tremendous amount of life in the animal world. There is vegetation, and there is vegetative life, and then there is animal life. And what I'm saying is that there is a complete distinction between animal life and human life. So he says, there is found in the human being that which is not found in any other form of life upon earth. The Hainu Hahakoro, in the human being, there is a composition. That is, there is a compound, there exists a compound of two elements. They are contained in the human being two elements that are completely different one from the other. Completely different. And that is Agufa Hanushamo, that in the human being there is the body and there is the soul. Now, I'm going to make a distinction between Neshomo and Nefesh. So, let us just remember that. The Neshomo is the soul. We're going to call it the soul. We make distinctions afterwards, and the group is the body. And so, in the human being, there is a body and there is a soul. But, he says, and this is the question that is always asked, but hasn't an animal got a soul? An animal's got life, isn't that the soul? Now he explains that, and we shall explain it in greater detail a little later. He says, there is in man a soul which is common to all other creatures. And this serves for feeling and intelligence that is in naturally in him. Now, you've got to be rather careful to know what he means here. He doesn't mean to say that in an animal can see and a human being can see, so it is exactly the same thing. He doesn't mean that. It means that in an animal there is sight, and in a human being there is sight. It doesn't say they are exactly the same. But the question of sight is in a human being and is in an animal. Got that? So we've got to be rather careful not to confuse that, not to say that sight in an animal is exactly the same as sight in a human being. That isn't so. That an animal has got sight, a human being has got sight. An animal has got hearing, a human being has got hearing. An animal can hear finer sounds than a human being can hear. There are sounds that a human being cannot hear, and an animal can hear. Sometimes you notice that his dog pricks up his ears. He heard something, but we can't hear it. The frequency is such that the human ear is not turned into it. You've got FM, you've got AM, you've got long wave, you've got short wave, you've got middle wave. You've got a radio, that isn't, you can't get, you can only get it, you can only get long way, you can't get short way, all sorts. So the animal has got, he is tuned in, he can hear waves that we cannot hear. So sight, but it's not that it is exactly the same, and you have a lot to say about it a little bit later. Now, the Indian HaNefesh HaZos, B'chol Balei Chayim, Gumetzius Echot Dat Me'arim. He says, and this Nefesh, not Neshoma, he's speaking about Nefesh. Nefesh is the lower life that all animals have. He says, the Indian HaNefesh HaZos, B'chol Balei Chayim, Gumetzius Echot Dat Me'arim. He says, it is very highly refined. The soul, the Nefesh, as opposed to the Neshoma, we are not speaking about the neshama now. Now we are speaking only about the nefesh. The nefesh in the animal or the human being, in any form of life, is something that is highly refined. Nimshach uvo b'sel chazera achrei hikolto. This already enters the embryo. Immediately it is formed. So immediately it is formed. From male and female seed, immediately is formed. This is already interesting. And it goes as the embryo, the fetus develops. So this nefesh, not to be confused with the neshama, spreads, develops with it. And it builds the body as is appropriate and appetite for that particular species. For example, the seed of an elephant will produce a baby elephant. It won't produce a baby giraffe. However much the father elephant and the mother elephant would like to have a baby elephant that's got a neck as long as a giraffe's, and look what a wonderful creature it will be. Such a long nose and such a long neck, and they want it very badly, it won't be. Because the nefesh in it, there is the nefesh, and the nefesh will develop that embryo as exactly as to what it should be. Now, that is already a chidush. Something, this is a novella. This is something that is new. The chain is but shape is got low, and as the embryo, the fetus develops, so it also spreads itself out. And it is in this nefesh that there is helkesh, that there is feeling. And this is where the feeling develops. Now, we've got the five senses. So these five senses belong to the nefesh. You know what the five senses are? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, touching, and feeling. So that is belongs to the realm of the nefesh. The chain has color uyulminahu, and also the intelligence that is appropriate for that particular species. Each species has its own intelligence. The beaver is a builder. That's the intelligence that it's got. The cat is a mouser. Catches mice. You can have a very good dog and a very intelligent dog and a highly intelligent. He sees a mouse, he doesn't turn a head. Oh, he goes away, he's afraid of it. A cat is all is there. So each one of these species has its own particular type of intelligence. And that all belongs to the nefesh. So the nefesh, each species and each kind has its nefesh, and its nefesh develops in it the five. First of all, it develops in it the whole shape and form of what it's going to be. It develops the senses in it, and it develops that intelligence that is appropriate for that particular kind of animal or creature. And so you find that as the animals are always very clever, but they're clever in one direction. a dog, what you can't only train a dog to do, but you can never train a cat to do that. Impossible. Cat has got other propensities. Ki bevale chayim atmo yesh kizrish godo bat kolosom v'yaskolas t'nei odom nidelis v'yaskolas kulon evnei kolem. He says, but it should be borne in mind that the understanding or the intelligence that is in animals is completely different from the intelligence that is in human beings. The ulon kol zeh naaseh b'nefesh hazeh. Nevertheless, all this comes from this nefesh, as opposed to neshama. Kefichuko atidi, according to its natural setup, uchefi achonas atelim ha-mesham shinro b'chol minu min lefi ma shehu. And it is, and that is, and this nefesh has its instruments, and its instruments are the five senses and its particular intelligence, and those are the influences of the nefesh. Got the idea? The neighbor nefesh of nivochad bechimas vechelches gekel. It is now in the soul of man, in the nefesh. As is not speaking about the neshama yet. In the neshivish of their body, we observe certain forces and certain powers to go. For example, the human being, adimyo, that is the imaginative faculty, bazikoron, and the faculty of memory, to remember, aseichel, that is intelligence. The human being soul has got all this, the horoton, and the will, kulok kochos banefesh. These are all powers that are embodied in the nefesh. Mukbolim bikbulim yehuduim. Of course they've got limitations. Ufoli bidrochim yehudim. And they act in certain ways. And they function in certain ways. Now he has described to us the nefesh. He's not speaking about the neshama. He's speaking only about the nefesh. Now I want to explain to you something here. And this is the way that Rambam explains it. I already intimated to you, and if it wasn't an intimation, it was certainly a hint. And the hint to you is that all the senses that the animal has, and these are senses that the human being has, broadly speaking, they are the same thing. It's sight, it's hearing, it's tasting, it's smelling, it's feeling and touching. But they are completely different. Now, let me just give you an example. The animal sees something. The human being can see exactly the same thing, but he sees it altogether differently. First of all, I don't think it has yet been determined if an animal sees colors. I think it does, but there's been a lot of controversy about it, whether an animal sees colors, whether an animal sees only black and white. I don't know, I can't give you the answer. I believe that an animal actually sees colors. So I would rather work on that basis. There are certain things that don't make sense if an animal doesn't see colors. Why have birds got such beautiful plumes if their mates can't see it? So it seems that they've got colors to make it distinguishable. So. Now the Rambam gives the following example. He says, we speak about light. There is light in this room. It's electric light, and we call it light. In the daytime, there's light in this room. But it's sunlight in the room. Is it the same light? But it's light. There can be light from the moon. Is it the same light? There can be light from a kerosene lamp. They call it kerosene, yeah? There can be light from a kerosene light. There can be light from a candle. All these are different lights, and yet it is light. So an animal sees and an animal hears. But it's not the same hearing, it's not the same seeing as a human being. Now, scientists today as we discuss various times, they have discovered very wonderful things. And they explain very wonderful things. There are certain things that they can't explain, and unfortunately, they explain them wrongly. And we have dealt with them. Now, my quarrel with the scientists is not a religious quarrel. My quarrel with the scientists is an intellectual quarrel. My grandchildren today were watching an educational program on Channel 9 or 34, I'm not which. And this was a woman teaching nature to children. She was excellent. I was just listening into what she was teaching. And she was describing various forms of animal life. And next to her was a beautiful creature. It was an owl. But it was an arctic owl.
Just that bird.
Yes. Now, this is a beautiful bird, pure white. Now, I can understand how that bird is white, but I cannot accept the scientist's explanation for it, but I must be really careful to warn you that it's not all scientists. But the majority of scientists, and don't forget, Ibsen said, the majority is not always right. Who are the fools? Are fools in the majority, or are wise people in the majority? The fools are in the majority. They hear they fools or not. So the majority of scientists work this way, but it doesn't mean to say they're right. And they say the owl has evolved and therefore needs to have protection and so he's white, he's the same color as the snake. I can't for the life of me see that the owl has so much sense and intelligence that he knows he must be white for his own protection, and even if he knows it, to be able to make himself white, I can't understand that. It just doesn't make sense to me. That Hashem created his white, that I can understand. Now, a polar bear, so we need reason for that, is a very dangerous creature. He looks so benign, but he isn't. And he goes through a very hard life. He's got to find food, and he can't find food very easily. He has to feed mainly on seal, and he loves baby seal. Now he's white. He's the same color as the snow. And he's so clever that he covers up his nose. His nose is black. He covers up his nose with his paw. Doesn't use his right paw because an animal hasn't got left and right, you see. Sometimes with his left paw, sometimes with his right paw, he covers it up and so that the seal can't see. Is that fair to the seal? It's a very remarkable thing. Next time you go to the zoo, have a look at the polar bear. The polar bear has got brown blotches on it. Gives the seal a chance to detect. Now you can't tell me that the polar bear there wants the little seal to be protected so he develops ground pockets. You can't tell me that the little seal has got to be protected so he makes the polar bear have brown blotches. You can't tell me that. But that is the way God created it. So on the one hand, he's got a chance to get his prey. On the other hand, if the bears would be able to catch every little space seal, before very long, there would be no more seals, and the bears would have nothing to live on. So there are baby seals that get away. That is, we understand this, that is the way, that is creation, that is the way Hashem created it. The scientists have their own explanation of it. Now, scientists try to reduce everything. I want to explain something to you. And I want to explain it to you because I want you to know how important it is to be able to think independently. There's a lot going on today, anti-war demonstrations. And there is a slogan that they've got, oil for blood, or blood for oil. And the slogan is, no blood for oil. So, but in this war, they don't once mention the question of Kuwait. These same protesters don't once mention Kuwait. Now that has been scientifically observed. Not once do they mention the attacks on Israel, because that's against their thesis. They want to stop war. How do you stop war? With this slogan. No blood for oil. But it might be blood for Kuwait. It might be blood for Israel. It might be blood against transgression, against aggression. It might be blood against evil. They keep completely quiet about that. It doesn't end there. If anybody should mention Kuwait and that it is finished, then he doesn't belong to them anymore. Then they cut the tires of his car, they paint it red. It doesn't belong to that anymore. No tolerance. I can't take it because I'm a liberal. That is the way they behave. I told you about a professor in Texas. He dared question evolution. They removed him from his tenure. They removed him from his teaching position. They took away his secretary and put in his work in only he can do research. Not allowed to do any teaching. So the whole movement is to read. It's a kind of reductionism. So, when it comes to science and man, to reduce man to an animal. If you reduce him to the lowest common denominator. Now, it goes far beyond that, and it's very important if you really want to understand the Derech Hashem and what he's saying. It's very good to be able to understand what it is that is happening in the world today. And then you can contrast it. It's interesting to read the biographies that are written today. The biography is written, you just examine it. The whole biography is to denigrate the man and to reduce him to its lowest level, lowest common denominator. All people are the same. No difference. Doesn't matter who it is. All the same. The only people with whom you cannot do it is with the Gnome Yisrael. Can't do it. They don't have mistresses. They don't divorce their wives. They don't have illegitimate children. They don't have bankruptcies. Nothing is different. You can't do it with a Torah Jew. In Toronto, there are three brothers. One of them I met Albert Reichman. His brother, Paul Reichman. He's got a third brother, I don't know at all. What the media hasn't only done to find something wrong there, cannot lay the hands on. You know, Bilam was asked to curse the Jewish people. He did everything he could possibly do. Yes. In the end, my son will accomplished in a second way. Couldn't help himself. How goodly are your tents and Jacob, your dwelling places in Israel, you have to say. Jewish family life couldn't get out of it. The media had to admit that I hadn't been able to find anything about the Reichman brothers that I could possibly be able to say. Nothing. That is so. You won't find it anywhere else. What happens with a Catholic priest? There was an archbishop in Los Angeles. Wherever you go, but the same trouble all along. And the whole purpose of the biographers are reduced them, just reductionism, just reduced them. So that is what is being done. And generally speaking, if the idea is to reduce the man, there is no soul, there is no afterlife, reducing to nothing. He is an advanced animal. That is all he is. The Tolle view is completely the reverse of that. The Tolle view is, as he says, man is something quite good. So the Rambam explains that an animal sees and a human being sees, but they don't see the same thing. An animal has got hearing, human being has got hearing. It's completely different, it's not the same type of hearing. The field, not the same. Exactly, he says, it is equivalent to the different forms of light. Whether it is the light from the sun and the light from the candle, it's light. But they are two different forms of light. So that is what we've got now. And that is what he tells us here. So, they are the faculties of the human being. The human being has got the imaginative faculty, the human being has got the faculty of memory, of understanding, of will. It has the faculty of the will. An animal cannot will against its nature. Can't do it. A human being can will against its nature. Nature is to do something, he can will it against, he can control his nature, he can change his nature, that a human being can do it, an animal can't do it. So, the analysis, the final analysis is that the human being, although he's got a nefesh, but the nefesh of the human being is quite different from the nefesh of an animal. And I told the story before at Amichod, where many years ago, there was a professor of sociology at Drew University who was invited to come out to South Africa to give a certain number of lectures. And he was the world authority on marriage. And a few of us were scheduled to have a private meeting with him. And he arrived late at the meeting and he excused himself. And he saw that he had been put out. He was just not himself. And so he sat down and he composed himself. And he said, I've just gone through a shocking experience. In Johannesburg in those days, there was a woman, and she was a modern psychologist. And the psychology was, she was teaching parents to, the name was Lejeune. What was her first name? I think it was her first name. Lejeune, I think it was what she was. She was a pretty clever woman. He was David Mason. The professor was David Mason. I don't remember what her name was. Now, she was a psychologist, and she still belonged to the school. She changed hospitals, by the way. It took her 15 years, but she changed. And I have to fight for this. Children, let them do what they like. He wants to break the crockery. She wants to take all the glassware and throw it out of the porch where you live on the third floor and break it. Let her do it. To get rid of all this anger in her. Let her do it. Anyway, she changed after 15 years, she changed completely. But that was the
she did a lot of rehearsals to how to teach the children in the nursery school, and they insisted upon David May going to visit the most progressive school in the whole of the African continent. Then they didn't say progressive for the whole of the African continent. South continent, the backward continent. So he went to the school and he came back and he carried her. They were three teaching children sick. What were they doing? First of all, they had guinea lambs. You know what guinea lambs are? They had those little creatures. In addition to guinea lambs, I mean, they used to use the guinea lambs to teach the children what is sick. Then they put on a plate for him. A flower and another flower, and butterflies and bees, and one bee ran from one flower to another flower, and they taught them pollination and everything like that, and that is, this is how they taught them things. And he was furious. He said, you are ruining these children for the rest of their life. He said, you are equating human sexuality with animal sexuality. You are equating human behavior with animal behavior. It is with an animal, it is a biological act. With a human being, it's a love act. Something quite different. And you are teaching children from that early age that it is a biological act. It's exactly what it's love. So in the human being and in the animal seems to be the same. And it's all something that is completely different. And that is what we've got to understand. And that you can't, with the terms of view, you can't accept this reductionism that there is inside. Man is only an animal. He's not only an animal. Aristotle says, man is a social animal. Rambam doesn't say man is a social animal. He says, man needs society. The man is not a social animal. That's not what he means. Now, let us go on to the second section of this chapter. The second section of this chapter goes on, and it says, Omnom, Mubad Koze, Ninto Elbo Odo Matthias Nafi, Nito the Elbo Mayo. He says, besides all this, however, besides all this, there is to be found in the human being, and he's speaking still about the human being, the teeth nafshi di nidol the alien ma'al, a soul phenomenon that is different and considerably higher than this. The aim of that is that we also have order Aaron and Kosher by Shor Rossi, Moyagel, and Yeshmer, and Kosher by Rome. And the purpose, of its coming into man is to bind that man with the highest roots. She Yeshmer, and Kosher by Rome, with which he has to be connected. Leo's master of Molidin told them so, but Kilchus were Yelim. So that his deeds will cause reverberations or consequences or issues in the highest powers above. So that is, that man can do things on earth that affect the highest forces above. And they in turn reverberate and have an effect on that which takes place here upon earth. And that is all part of the story of the Ishtarshus over which we have spent so much time. Uba Matsiu Saze, Nisha Hashefo Hanishpo El Hodom, Minamat Kelos Leyoni, Umineu Badefe Shezochavnu, Umineu Bagu. He says, and it is through this actual phenomenon that it influences the nefesh in the soul, and through influencing the nefesh, the soul, it influences also the body of the human being.
So you can see that is why the physical aspect of the human body is completely different from the physical aspect of the animal, although it's called by the same name. It is called sight, it is called hearing. It doesn't see the same things and they don't hear the same things. Because man is influenced by this higher spiritual essence. We don't know yet what it is, but it calls it a higher spiritual essence. And the upper soul leads the lower soul and activates in the lower soul all those functions that are necessary for it. The whole money is money order, whatever it is required by the human being. And it affects the human being in an appropriate way with that, with the extent to which he is able to relate to the highest sources. And this great soul connects with the lower soul, and the lower soul, with that which is very refined in the blood of man, the and so the body and the two souls unite with one another. So he's now speaking about a higher soul and about a lower soul, and the lower soul is a physical soul, and now we begin to understand the difference between the neshama and the nefesh. The higher soul is the neshama, and the nefesh, the soul that has to do with the physical much more, is the nefesh. But the neshama influences the nefesh. The nefesh influences all parts of the human body. All the faculties of the human body, all the senses of the human body, these in turn influence the body. But what is the source? The source is the neshama, not the nefesh. With the animal, the source is the nefesh. And that is how it comes home together different. Just let us stop here for a moment. Do you understand what it's about? All right. It affects the nefesh and it affects the neshama. It makes a pedim, it makes a point in the neshama. That's good. But that becomes a little bit clearer later on. Yes, Hannah?
I have a couple of questions about the nefesh.
Yes.
Is it something that's physical?
Yes, and that's a very good question. I just want to explain that to you. And when I work with physicists, then very early in my discussions with them, I've got to make something clear. And that is, I might speak about the abstract and the spiritual as opposed to the material, the concrete and the physical, in a different way from what they do. My next step is to take into consideration what they say. Now let me just give you an example. When I speak about the physical and the material, there are the five criteria. That is, it responds to the five senses of man. Is that clear? A lump of sugar. I know it's a lump of sugar. It's square, it's white, it tastes like a hill. A hill is something that is physical. When it comes to light, and it comes to sound, and it comes to heat, I speak about that as being abstract in the, on the first level. Now, a physicist, your physicist is not abstract, which is physical. You follow? So,
the nefesh is in that, in the scientific sense, it's physical. You understand what I'm saying? In the same way, life sounds neat to the scientist, this is physical. It's not spiritual. It's not abstract. Afterwards, I also go into that. That the first go off, we've got to just get that perfectly clear. So the nefesh, of course, it is physical. It is physical in the same sense that a gas is physical. Might not be able to see it at all. Air is physical. There's oxygen, there's nitrogen, it's physical. You can't see it, you can't see it, you can't hear it, but it's physical. And so the soul is also in a higher degree, but it is physical. The neshama is not physical. That is purely, but when I say physical, I'm using physical in the scientific sense. You understand what I mean? Right, what's your next question?
Then does the nefesh die when the animal dies?
The nefesh dies when the animal dies, yes. That is subject to death. So, an animal gives no afterlife. The nefesh gives no afterlife.
How does it get into the
animal? How does it get into the animal?
It's not like an neshama which Hashem
puts in. No, the nefesh also, it is there. The only thing, how should I explain it to you? The sun is there. It is a creation of God. It is always there. The earth is there. It's a creation of God. It rotates around on its own axis, produces day and night. It rotates around the sun, produces the seasons. Now, how does it do that? On the one hand, God has implanted that power in that particular body. So that is the way it acts. Can't act differently. But at rock bottom, we know that it's God who created it, it's God who makes it act in that particular way. So it is with the message. In the end, it acts in that particular way. When it comes to human being, the message is activated by the soul, the soul functions with it, and so forth. So it says that in the human being, there's the neshama, there's the message, and there is the good. And they all interact. As long as the person is alive, they all interact. Right. Jude?
Some books have about people who have worked with people who are dying. So that
the people who have died.
Yeah, when people die, you can feel the energy. When is it the nefesh that they can feel coming out of the top of the skull?
Yes, I guess. Yes, sir.
You have to. When it's in the shama of the body, the nefesh she said was from the sea.
Yes.
When does the neshama get
to? Well, that we'll speak about. That we still get to speak about. We'll still speak about that. Mm-hmm. Now, the next paragraph is a little bit difficult, but I think we'll be able to get through it with the paragraph. He hasn't yet spoken about the neshama. I'm sorry. He has spoken about the neshama, but he hasn't given it that specific name. But he has spoken about the nefesh ha'elyono and the nefesh ha'tachtono. He's spoken about the higher nefesh and the lower nefesh. So the higher nefesh is the neshama, and the lower nefesh is the nefesh, and the lower nefesh is, as I tried to explain, all three of the neshama, of the nefesh, and of the guf. And the neshama acts on the nefesh, and the nefesh acts on the guf, and the guf lives back on the nefesh, and the nefesh lives back on the neshama. I don't know whether this is a phenomenon that still takes place, but when I was studying Nandana, there were always things happening. Now, I don't know whether this happens in New York or in any particular town, city, town, but it was, and it used to happen, there were other cities also where it happened. I believe Vienna was famous for it, Paris was famous for it, Berlin was famous for it, London was famous for it, it was a certain extent also in Manchester, those are towns I know. And that is that there was always a thought or an idea that was being discussed. Intellectual circles, always some kind of an idea. Sometimes there were a few ideas between circles and a few ideas, but this is a very interesting thing. This is the old listener always used to focus on that. And it ultimately changed, you see. People changed over this particular journal. And there was another journal that was published in England, and it focused on this particular aspect of London life. It always focused on the subject that was being discussed there. At one stage, there was a very interesting subject we discussed, and that was that when a person became angry, the bile secreted a certain substance. But they couldn't say whether the person's temperament was such that if something happened, the bile excreted a certain substance, and that made him angry, or whether when a person became angry, the bile excreted this particular substance. Couldn't say it. Couldn't find out. Afterwards, today I'm sure they know about it, but then this was going on. This was an interesting thing, and of course it led to many other things. For example, there is this question. Does clothing affect a human being? Or doesn't it? Now, in the old days, when one went to university, women had to wear dresses, and they had to wear stockings, and they had to wear shoes. Men had to wear either a two-piece suit or a three-piece suit, or the very least, a blazer, a pair of trousers, a shirt, a tie, socks, and shoes. That wasn't sufficient. They wore gowns over that. And you couldn't come into a lecture room if you weren't dressed properly. If you didn't have a gown, you weren't allowed in. That was, and that carried on right up to the outbreak of the Second World War. Now, the students were completely different. First of all, they were very serious. Secondly, they were polite. Thirdly, they were respectful to their professors, to their lecturers. Did that have any effect on them, the clothing? Or the fact that they were polite and respectful and courteous, you know, because of that they put on their face. But what we do see is, it's probably a two-way traffic, but what we do see is that if the clothing affected the person. So we see something that is completely material affect something that, for the moment I'm facing, is called spiritual. The clothing affects the behavior of the person, of the man. You follow what's happening? So the body affects the soul also. And the soul affects the neshama. And of course the nefesh affects the soul. So we've got it in the human being that the neshama affects the nefesh and the nefesh affects the group, and then it goes backwards also. Is that fairly clear? That's not too difficult to understand. Even if you've been here only the second time, isn't that so true? Or is it very difficult to understand? understanding. Of course, you were spoiled by this man. What was his name?
John Searle.
John?
Searle.
He did nothing damage to this man. Not to you. You try to do it for that. Now, you see, the may occasionalization of service nefesh goes to guru, and the day of nefesh at that day, though, means says, Mutelis is ruling over the moon, the moon on the menu, as he started for ancient him and enjoying with the honey of the joy. He says, now, because of this nefesh that is bound up with the good, it poses an end, in turn, it is connected with the neshama. So the neshama is connected with the nefesh, and the nefesh is connected with the guf. It imposes limitations on the neshama. So the neshama cannot connect with the highest forces above because of its limitations caused by the nefesh and caused by the body. And I'm making myself clear. Now that isn't very difficult to understand because we see it happening. Now the psychologists have done wonderful work as far as that is concerned. And they know that a person does something and he is motivated by something else. The person himself doesn't know that he's being motivated by that. But the psychologists have discovered it, and a good psychologist can certainly get down to it and find that that is the motivation of the human being. Then we can go still further and find that there's a motivation to a motivation, and the person isn't conscious of it at all. And now you come to a stage where the psychologist gives up. You see, that's as far as I can go. The psychiatrist takes over. You can go still a little bit further. But the human being isn't aware of it at all. And then, of course, there comes a stage where the psychiatrist gives up a little bit. But there are forces that take place that the human being does things or thinks in certain ways, and these are caused by much higher influences. But it only goes a certain distance. It doesn't go right to the source of the soul. And because it's handicapped, it has limitations imposed upon it by the body and by the nefesh. And the body has all kinds of limitations. So we have got limitations. And so we cannot get a complete connection between that which is completely transcendental and spiritual. We cannot connect with that. Those are the limitations. We can only go a person certain distance. Some people go further, some people don't go so far, some people don't go any distance at all. Calls a man a wisdom is fatality, my good guy, to call him a work in the fair order. As long as this nishomo is bound up with the body, it has its limitations. That means for the whole span of man's life. Um, if by anything by say a group is such a yoda, the Ola Ola is going to marry. And it is influences with the deeds of the body, and through that it is able to connect with the life of the Creator itself. Or, exactly the opposite, a lingers me there, or it can turn away from it, but it gives the focus of tumor, and attach itself to that which is contamination and defilement itself. Well, you know, living in California is a wonderful thing, because you see it all in California. You see how people have detached themselves from anything that is witness, anything that is spiritual, and are sunk in contamination and in defilement. And of course this is dependent on the whole makeup of man. What is it that he wants? What is his determination? Is his determination Aliyah? Is it ascent? Or is his determination Yerudah? Is it descent? Depends upon the man. What is his determination and his direction?
and this intention of man and direction of man and determination of man acts in man and leads the nefesh and directs it, that I take it both to Yuria and Yachanoso, and then it gets its ideas, its ideology, it gets it now, but he's putting it on the wrong path. So my leaders for our servants were rotten for the Asadash of Israel, and it creates in the human being the thoughts and the words depending on what direction he has given it. That is as far as we will get to that. I was hoping that we would get to the conception too, but we don't get as far as that. So let us stop there for today. That's a very good question. If the Betty wants to know whether during sleep, is the soul free or is it not free? It is free both ways, depending on the direction that the human being is taking. If his direction is towards contamination and defilement, in his sleep there is more contamination and defilement. If his direction is towards purity, towards sorrow, towards purity, then in sleep there is more than there is when the man is awake. That depends. And that all fits in with the sleep. Yes, Linda?
A few weeks ago we had discussed where soothsayers, etc., etc., and dream. Now, when Saul went to ask, could that, the dream, the vision, or whatever it was, this person, was that yes. in a dream?
Well, we will take a little bit further in that. I'll explain to you how that works. First of all, about dreams.
No, because you were saying it was the lower soul that yes, comes up, not yes, the higher soul.
That's absolutely right. I just want to tell you, in the dreams, you know, the Gemara tells about, there are all kinds of dreams, you see. There is a Gemara that tells about a Saddam Hussein type of tyrant that's called the Talmud Kotam, called the Golden Sword, and said to him, "You're such a bitter man, tell me what I'm going to dream about tonight. And if you're wrong, your head goes off." He says, "Send me out there. Tell me what you're going to do tonight." There was one tyrant who was even a bigger tyrant than he. He says, "That man, you're going to dream that he's going to come to you. And he's going to come with an army. And he's going to destroy your country. He's going to destroy your people. And he's going to take away your wives. And he's going to kill your children before your eyes. And then he's going to take you into captivity." He said, "Well, that's enough stuff, man. You think he didn't dream it?" He was worried about all that. Of course he did. So there are, the various form of dreams are that thing, dreams during the day. And of course there are things that are deep, deep in a person that come out in a dream, and then obviously said and written about that. And in the Gemara there's a tremendous amount of that. Now when it comes to soul, I tell you that there were two distinct schools of thought. The one school of thought says this was real. We did that whole chapter. Yes. This was real. The other school of thought says no. It wasn't real. This was, and I told you, said right up to modern times. You've got people like Sir Oliver Lodgins that don't enjoy it, who believe that you could speak to the dead. There's Paul Gallico, absolutely certain that the whole thing is a hoax and you can't speak to the dead. Got both schools, and you have two schools right through. And so you've got schools that say that this was a hoax on the part of this woman, that it all she was able to do all this sort of thing, and so believed it. And the other school says, no, there was something. The Mandi asks another type of question at all. He said, this woman, was she the woman that Shlomo HaMelech describes in the 30th chapter of the book of Proverbs? Ashes highly meaning so. Was she that kind of woman? She was certainly not. How is it that she, that school that believes that it is real, how is it that she could communicate with Shmuel HaNovi? How could she communicate with Shmuel HaNovi? The Rav Shover, great Talmudists and great scholars were afraid to go to him. How could they communicate with you? So there's only the greatest of the great who went to them. All the people who didn't understand anything, they couldn't understand that, but they couldn't understand you. But the distance was so great. He says, how is it that she was able to connect at all with Shmuel HaNovi? That she was able to connect. Between the Nefesh and the Neshama, there are a lot else. She was only able to connect with the Nefesh. That will get a little bit later. That will get you section 6 out of the list. No. Don't. At the end of section 4. At the end of the section 4, that comes up. Where he discusses, I've told you now only that there is the Neshama, there is the Guf, and there is the Nefesh. The Neshama, the Nefesh, and the Guf. Now we're going to come at the other layers in between, and that we've got to discuss next time. Any other questions? Yes, Elizabeth.
When a person is physically sick, the group affects Nefesh, and Nefesh disenables the Neshama. If a person is physically sick, it can affect both his Nefesh and his Neshama. If a person is physically ill, that may affect the group, and that affects the Nefesh, and that could affect the Neshama.
Yes, that's it. The Rambam is very careful. He says a person has got to look after his health very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he doesn't look after his health, it affects his mind and his thinking.
The problem I have is that when a Misha Berach is dead for someone, it's a report of the Nefesh and a report of the Guf, but that's all.
Yes. Now, you see, I've got to explain to you that. Now, when I speak about the Guf, I speak about the soldiers. I speak about soldiers. When somebody knows the military, he says, do you mean the Marines?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know where the Marines are. I've got no idea what to say. I thought Marines were sailors and ships. But they say the Marines are now fighting, they're moving to fighting with the Iraqis on the ground. How do they come to the ground? So it's a different sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I just speak about soldiers, you see. Now, that is, we speak, the course of Nefesh and the course of Guf, we speak about Nefesh, everything above the Nefesh, we just take it
away.
That is what we do. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
That's great. That's a great message.